You know what this is?
Is this the podcast?
This is the podcast.
This is weird, guys. This is a podcast.
Are we podcasting?
Yeah. We are a podcast. We are all huddled
in a hotel,
very closely around two microphones in a hotel room in Seattle, Washington.
It's been a long day.
It has day been one of PAX, and everyone's yawning.
Oh, it's I'm tired.
We haven't even gotten started yet.
Nope. Hey, guys.
I'm sleepy.
I'm Nick. I'm joined today by Ed, who's the first. This is the first time on the podcast. Ed.
Yep, sure is.
Why wasn't he on the podcast at PAX South?
Because all four of you guys were there.
Yeah.
Or all
Wait,
four of
you
guys
were on the podcast at PAX South.
No, I wasn't.
Pratt.
You weren't.
I was just sitting off to the side on the
website. Oh, well, that wasn't the only podcast we recorded at PAX.
Brad yes, it was.
Was it?
It was.
You only did one.
We only had one
we
podcast.
Didn't, we
with
didn't
material.
Record any at Nolan's place. We only did that one in the.
Oh, that's right. Because y'all were singing. Gotcha. That's
media
right.
Media room.
That's right. Well, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of material to cover at PAX South, so.
Yeah.
That's appropriate, but we're a PAX Prime.
And there's a hell of a lot of material to cover
and
here.
There's a shit ton of material
oh my
to cover
God.
Here. So we're going to get right down to it. We're going to talk about some of the video games that we played today.
Oh, my name's Chris.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot. Chris Davis is here.
Yes, I am.
And Crispy.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Man, Crispy's tired. I think we're all tired. This is like, we flew in very early this morning. Oh, Chris flew in very early this morning. And then Ed and I both got in late last night, so we're all running on pretty...
I survived all day on 3 hours of sleep.
Yeah, so I think we need a good solid rest tonight. So let's go ahead and get through this. Let's do this, guys. Let's do this!
Let's fucking do it! Talk about games!
Shh.
We're in a hotel room. What kind of games?
I'm sorry. It sounded like someone was...
Sorry, we're on the executive level, so we have to maintain...
A little bit of composure.
An air of
decorum.
An air of professionalism, you might say.
Yes.
So let's talk about the games we played today. We played a lot. Today was the media hour.
Yeah.
Ed and myself. Chris hadn't arrived yet, so it was just Ed and myself.
We started off with Dark Souls 3.
We did play Dark Souls 3, which
How
I'm sure...
How was it?
Dude, it was...
I watched the demo a little bit, and it looks... The environment looks very Bloodborne.
It does, yeah. I know
like
that
it
too.
Looks like Yharnam. A lot of the stuff that they started doing in Bloodborne with Yharnam, like all the statues and like the gothic architecture.
Yeah, a lot of gothic architecture.
Cathedrals everywhere.
It reminded me of the castle in Bloodborne. You know, like
yeah.
the
Cainhurst.
Yeah, Cainhurst Castle. Yeah, yeah.
I think it's reasonable to assume that just how frequently they're turning out Dark Souls and Bloodborne and whatever. That they must be reusing like old cut assets or perhaps like sharing concepts.
It's not ripped.
It's not a bad thing.
I'm not saying it's like, oh, I saw that statue in Bloodborne. It's just there's a certain design aesthetic that I think has carried.
Also,
over.
I think some of the enemy designs look straight out of Bloodborne too. Like the dogs in the demo looked very similar to Bloodborne. But obviously you have bonfires and you have the shield based combat, and the character looks obviously more like a Dark Souls character than Bloodborne. But
like armor.
It looks like a really interesting mix of the two, maybe.
Which is cool.
Hands on, it is definitely faster paced as far as combat goes. It feels more responsive. Like Bloodborne has this very frenetic feeling to it because it was very you move very quickly and you're dodging more often. I mean, you didn't have shields, so you were just dodging and attacking.
Right.
And even though you're using shields here, the character movement feels more like Bloodborne.
Yeah,
to me at least.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that too, because I was watching a guy play and his character was like kind of decked out in like the standard knight armor, and he had like a sword and shield, but he was dodging around, and it was like he was moving like his dodges looked. They were definitely like quick dodges, like in the Dark Souls like weight system. But they looked a little like punchier. They looked like he was moving around and covering a lot more ground.
Yeah, even I noticed like trying to, because Bloodborne was my first Souls game, so I'm more used to doing a lot of the roles. So I tried to do a lot more of the roles, but even that I felt slower and encumbered a little bit by the gear. It seemed like to me.
Yeah. And I feel like my stamina ran a little bit faster.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you're obviously
underleveled.
You're underleveled, and the armor you have equipped is having an impact on how fast you can react.
Which is a big difference between Bloodborne and.
It did feel cool. It felt like a really polished Souls game, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be split. Lots of people are probably going to love it.
Well,
some people may not be as welcoming to the changes, but hey.
I'm going to go try and play it tomorrow, so.
Cool.
Hopefully.
Ed got killed by a dragon.
I did get killed by a dragon.
Dude, I got killed by a dog.
That's classic.
It just landed yours and it was like...
Yours is better.
Yeah, it just landed like, and all of a sudden man, it breathed fire everywhere. And I was like, oh, okay, well.
Dude, that's a thing, man. Every Dark Souls, Demon Souls had the fucking just like random dragons that'll show up and just fuck your day up for no reason. Like, loved it. Loved it. Speaking of Souls, though, there was another game that was very heavily inspired by Dark Souls. Heavily inspired by Dark Souls.
Yeah.
Called Salt and Sanctuary.
Yes, which...
Which I actually liked. It was cool.
No, it's from a developer called Ska Studios.
They did Dishwasher and...
And...
Time Viking and...
It's Time Viking Space Raptor, but... Space Raptor. A game you absolutely know. Time Viking, I made a game with zombies in it. They made that.
I didn't play that. Also, I mean, I know what you're talking about.
And their last title was Charlie Murder.
Gotcha.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, this is basically like a two-dimensional kind of like almost platforming... Dark Souls.
Yeah.
Right down to the fact, like, you have, you start your character creation by selecting, like, a basic class.
Which I didn't realize was also dictating the difficulty of the demo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There were such different levels, too. Like, there was level 3 characters and, like, level 20 characters.
I picked level 20 character. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, fuck it, man.
Had no idea what I was doing.
They specifically notated in the demo the characters that were for beginners and the characters that were for
dude, I literally players. Just looked at the pictures and I was like, ooh, that guy looks like he looks like a reaper and he has a scythe. I like that. I picked that.
And, is that in the
and
menu?
You got reaped.
No, that was...
that was clever, Chris Davis.
Reaped. Jesus Christ. That was in the... first half of the main hall, like way off by where Oculus Rift was.
Okay. It's in the all hall right. with the I can never remember the south hall or east hall, whatever. It's in the hall with the third party
it's
stuff.
It's in a hall. Yeah.
Square Enix, Capcom, a few others. Yeah. All
and right. It was like the interface, like the HUD looks like Dark Souls. Except like the bosses look like Dark Souls bosses. In fact, there was one boss in the demo called the Sodden Knight or the Sodden King or something like that. Sounds like a fucking Dark Souls boss. And like the guy sitting there explaining, he's like, yeah, Dark Souls was one of the inspirations for this. Yeah, and it's like, come on, dude.
Oh, James.
Come on. One thing that was kind of interesting that is different from Dark Souls is that it has that skill tree system.
Dude, that skill tree looked crazy.
Looked like a fucking sphere grid, right?
It looked like a sphere grid from Final Fantasy X. Yeah. It was so...
No, like, it does look like a sphere grid, but it looks more like a literal skill tree.
Yeah, well, I mean, they even have like an outline of a tree in the background, and you see all the... As the branches spread out, you just see all these circles kind of branching out where you can fill in and get different attacks.
So, like, are those different, like, I guess, talents? Are they, like... Each thing is a different kind of skill, or is it like plus one to HP or whatever?
Well, I think they were kind of like clustered into different like kind of regions that affect that you know, obviously there was like magic area and like an armor and a weapon area. And
I wouldn't mind going back and giving another try and paying more attention to the skill trees because my demo didn't last very long.
Yeah.
I actually fell off a ladder and lost half my health within two seconds of starting. Brutal.
And then you stepped on a booby trap.
And then I stepped on a booby trap.
You both stepped on the same booby trap.
And then I tried to stand my ground against a knight with a shield and it just...
Oh, that was terrible.
It didn't go well. Terrible. But it was fun. It was cool. The character, the combat feedback feels really good.
Yeah.
Like you get that feeling you get when you successfully take down an enemy was really satisfying. The one thing I did notice that I didn't like... and this is obviously probably an intentional decision on their part, but the enemies represent like physical barriers, just like a wall would. Mm-hmm. So you like in a lot of games, if you roll in that 2D plane, you would roll through
past them,
and you can attack from behind. The only way to move to the other side of an enemy is to literally jump over their head. Yeah. When you try and roll through them, you just roll into the front of them, like, and you hit just you stop, and then they'll just hit you.
Yeah.
Which felt kind of odd to me, but you know, other than that, I think
it might
a lot
work
of
for like much larger enemies.
Yeah, no, because I was fighting the boss too. And
you fought that big knight guy. But I'm talking about like enemies bigger than that.
You know,
I don't know. I feel like if you were going to translate a game like Dark Souls into a 2D plane, that would make sense.
Yeah,
because otherwise, why wouldn't you just roll and backstab everybody?
Yeah,
you know, and then where's the challenge? There's no, right. there's Yeah, there's nothing there.
I mean, it's very platformy, so having jump instead of dodge makes sense. Yeah. So.
I don't know. But
it was interesting.
I thought it was cool. It has a cool art style. It looks really pretty when you're
Then I gotta tell you, Scott Studios, they are very small. They are, it's a husband and wife.
Yeah.
And that was them two there.
Yeah.
That was their entire game. And they do this for every single game they do.
That's cool.
That's why I love this studio.
This strikes me as it strikes me as probably their biggest project to date, I think. I mean, don't get me wrong, I haven't played much of their previous stuff, but it seems like a pretty
You gotta check out their super indie games. Like the $1 games they put out are just magical.
Magical, Chris Davis.
Absolutely magical.
Magical. Speaking of magical, Ed and I played Rise of the Tomb Raider. I don't know. Ooh, sorry, that was did not. We? That was that was not a very good transition.
No, it wasn't magical.
Or
was it magical?
I don't know if magical was the word I would use to describe that game, but there's two things that Ed and I can confirm.
Yeah.
One, we raided a tomb.
Woo!
And two, there is underwater swimming.
There is underwater swimming.
We went swimming underwater as Lara Croft in Rise of the Tomb Raider.
And the place where it was, there wasn't like a lot of exploration to do underwater, but I can imagine that could be something they could utilize later in the game.
So the demo we played was actually the full-on demo they were showing at Gamescom, which is they released the footage showing everything leading up to the actual Tomb Raiding, and then they stopped. And then they said, you know, at the demo at Gamescom, people were actually doing that level, and that's what we played today. So yes, we full-on raided a tomb. It was the tomb of the prophet? Or
Prophet's tomb.
Mm-hmm. Which was cool. So you basically came out into that giant chamber, and you could see this giant, tower or altar or something, and at the top was where his tomb was, and you had to find a way to get up to the top. And you were doing things like breaking down walls to let water in, and which would rise, and then you could shoot things down to make things platforms to stand on and then jump to.
Right.
Just to clarify for everybody who's listening, what they played is what was shown off in the Gamescom demo recently that we did an impressions piece on.
Yes. But the impressions piece was literally based off of everything leading up to that point when the Tomb Raiding actually started. Like there's this big cinematic, dramatic lead up to it, which is actually really cool. Like I really liked the reboot because of this more cinematic nature of it. But you know, it didn't have a lot of that actual Tomb Raiding.
Yeah, there's a lot more puzzle solving when you're trying to traverse your way into the tomb, and especially the stuff that you're mentioning, breaking up in the walls to make the water rise and stuff like that.
A lot of the criticism that I think that I had in the actual impressions video you did, I felt better about playing this demo because my first instinct was, you know, when you first go into this giant room, there's this, you know, there's basically this vision you can activate, or there's this thing that kind of highlights this wall that you can break down and let the water in. I was why do they need to highlight it?
Like eagle vision?
Yeah, but I was why do they
have that in the original?
It does have that. Game. The survival instincts are still there.
But what I didn't know, because we didn't see the other half of the demo, is that that was there because it's the first time you see that, to show you that that's a thing that you can use. So when you go into the big tomb area, they don't point everything out like it did in that first room, but there are walls that you can break down. It just doesn't show them to you. But you learn to identify them based on the way they look.
You know why I don't like that? Because I think about a lot of really good puzzle games, particularly Portal.
Yeah.
And, you know, that you could think of a test chamber as a tomb, right? It's a room that they put you in, and there's a puzzle that you have to solve to get out of it.
Yep.
Or to advance, right?
Sure.
Portal doesn't give you it doesn't give you a glowy line, it doesn't give you a map marker, it doesn't give you eagle vision to say oh, this is the object you can interact with and this is the object you can't interact with, blah blah blah. You know, they put you in a room that has a very specific set of surfaces. You know, some surfaces you can put a portal on, some you can't, and you just have to figure out what's what.
Yep.
And it does a really good job of kind of training you without you necessarily being aware of it.
I do agree with you, because they didn't need to show me that wall that I could bust down with the water.
Right.
If I had gone to that room, I may not have immediately noticed it, but there is something suspicious about a wall where you can kind of see water kind of coming through.
I mean, there are visual cues in the art that kind of draw your eye towards
it. And I very naturally would have eventually gone over there and figured out that, oh, I can break this wall down to get water. And
it also wasn't the first time you broke down a wall with the axe, because you did it before that wasn't water related. It was just to get through a passage.
Yeah, and you know, this seemed, I liked that it seemed like a a nice balance, though, between the last Tomb Raider, which is very cinematic, and then, mm-hmm. like, classic Tomb Raider, where there's lots of puzzle solving, because I really like the cinematic nature of the new Tomb Raider reboot. I think it's, like, that whole dramatic build-up, that slow traversal, finding your way into that tomb,
yeah.
where you're, like, crawling through that crevice, and there's, like, scorpions everywhere, and you're kicking it down, and then you're jumping across these ledges as they're collapsing and stuff. Like, that's all really beautifully done. Uh-huh. And then to kind of cap it off by coming into this giant open chamber, and then literally having puzzles to solve.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, and to with the intent of getting to a tomb and opening a sarcophagus, like,
which like is literally a tomb.
Which literally. Is literally what Lara Croft yeah. does. Like, yeah. that was cool. And then the demo ended with a bunch of shooting. yeah. Not a bunch. I shot, like, two dudes and then left them
to die. On a high note.
But yeah, I thought it was cool. It was nice to see that demo to its completion. And I feel way better about the game now, having seen, you know, what they mean when they say, we're adding tombs back into Tomb Raider.
And for those that like the gruesome death sequences in the first game, in the reboot, they're still there.
Yeah,
there was a good one that like Nick fell on a bunch of spikes.
I was walking and I just didn't pay any attention at all to the fact that there is a very obviously like broken floor and I just stepped on it and just fell right through and just impaled myself on like 20 spikes and I was like, ugh!
That's booby traps 101.
Yeah, I know. I felt pretty dumb.
So, but you like what you played, right?
Yeah, I thought it was cool. Okay. I liked it. They gave us this really cool poster with a really ugly looking Lara Croft on it.
Yeah.
Like, it's a beautiful...
That poster would be really nice if Laura's face was
It's a really
up.
Beautiful poster, but Laura's face looks like she's made out of clay.
Yeah.
But, like, she looks like Clayface. From the Batman animated series a little bit.
Is but that great?
If the things that we see from, like, the demo and the Gamescom and all the trailers or whatever, if they maintain a good balance of the puzzles and then also the action sequences, I think it could be a pretty good game. The problem is it's coming out 4 days after Fallout 4, so...
Which means on a platform that is still kind of... Behind.
Yeah.
So it
that is my question, though. I mean, everybody's gonna be playing Fallout.
Should I play
Tomb Raider?
Dude, I kind of hope they delay Tomb Raider.
I do too.
It's not.
Not that I'm not excited to play Tomb Raider. I am very excited. But let's be honest here, people. Fallout came out 4 days before this, and people are gonna need at least a month of solid Fallout time before they even consider.
And there's some rumors
that
the exclusivity is gonna end by like. Q1 2016.
They've already said that their intention is to release the PS4 version of this game next holiday season.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, but I think the PC is coming out sooner than
PC
that.
Oh yeah,
because I think Microsoft is doing some
Microsoft platform
deal. Yeah, they can do that without really having to compete with themselves because it's still Microsoft.
Yeah.
What else did we play? Oh shit. We tried the Morpheus.
Oh, that was really cool.
Which I still want to go back and try and play that horror game on the Morpheus.
Oh, yeah.
There's a horror game called The Kitchen. I don't even know what that is, but it's probably creepy.
I read the fucking impressions of that from GamesCon, and it was just like, oh. Or it was either GamesCon or E3, but it sounds fucking too much for me. Like, it sounds too much.
Well, I'll tell you this.
It's not as much a game as it is just, like, a scene that plays out with you
wonderful
in it.
I mean, God, can you imagine? Like, I've always, if I could have played PT with a Morpheus, holy fuck!
No.
Because this is today was the first time that I've played two demos of the Oculus Rift. One was a kind of shoehorned demo of Alien Isolation, which didn't really impress me, but it was never really intended to be an actual game.
Mm-hmm.
Second one was this like trippy psychedelic, just meditation game at PAX East, I think, which obviously didn't impress me that much. So this is... I have not been entirely sold yet on the idea of having these devices that you wear on your head and, like,
mm-hmm.
that envelop you in the experience, whatever. But today was the first time I put one of these on my head, and I was like, holy crap. This feels like something that I would be interested in spending my money on, you know, assuming there's
some
games.
So let's talk about the little tiny game that we played. So
which was like what, monsters
and monsters or something or whatever
it
was.
Monsters and robots.
Yeah, so the person with the VR headset was the monster, and then there was four other people.
Yeah, it's
up to four people playing as the robots, and they were like throwing stuff at them and dodging out of the way of things that were falling.
The monster literally, his job is to sit there and like
move their head. Back and forth. There's no controls other than you moving your head around as the monster.
But I will say this: even before we actually went into the game itself, and we're sitting in the like the menu before I guess you start, and you're in like this toy room.
Yeah, that was
cool. I was just looking around, and I could turn my head all the way around. And I was like, I felt for the first time, I didn't feel like it. It didn't feel cheap. It felt really, like the production values were really high. It looked good. It looked like something that, you know, like before, every other experience I've had with like an Oculus, you know, given last time I played the Oculus, it was like a year ago,
right,
whatever. But like every other time I've demoed one of these devices, it's just felt like cool tech, but not something that I could see people really wanting to shell out a couple $100.
And the Morpheus felt smooth too. Like as I was moving my head around, I didn't feel any jankiness to that. And the guy was talking to me about the way it works is like because of that the lights that are on the front of it.
Yeah,
it does light tracking just like the little LED that's on the PS4 controller.
Yeah,
and so with that, it's a lot more precise than the having accelerometers or whatever in there.
It looked really cool.
Yeah,
but so we played it twice. One time with Ed playing the monster, one time with me playing the monster.
And I won both times. It's fine.
Ed won
it's
both fine. Times, I will admit. But the best part of the demo was losing.
Because, that was really cool.
Because when they lose, the little monsters like pull out this giant gun and they like shoot the monster. And the monster goes flying off into space.
And this whole time you're...
But you are the monster. So you're just like flying through clouds and you're looking around. And you're like, you just feel like you're being propelled backwards.
And really you see the planet shrink behind you. Yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah, it was neat.
I almost wish that I lost just so I could see that.
That was cool. Like that was the part where I was like, holy shit, this tech is actually really cool.
Yeah,
dude. And the potential to have like... The potential to play a game with a controller... But have that visual feedback or having the visual interface of it be in that device could be fucking amazing. To me, though, it doesn't feel like an accessory. It almost feels like a platform in and of itself because games are going to be developed specifically for the Morpheus or the Oculus, I guess. It's just people are... I still want to know what the price point's going to be because that's going to dictate everything. And honestly, it feels to me like this is more of a gaming platform than an accessory for an existing one.
Right.
$599.
No way.
Chris Davidson, $600.
Dude, those guys that we talked to at the end of the day bought a Gen 4 dev kit for $350. That, I'm telling you. Like, really? They're not going to be $500.
God.
That's And not to mention, by the time...
No one's going to buy it.
And by the time the tech...
Especially the Morpheus, because no one buys $300 or even... like $200 accessories for their console.
Yeah.
Right?
Have a $400 PS4, I'm not going to buy a $500 set of goggles.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
By the time the ridiculous. Tech is ready for to be sold, though, the cost of producing them might be low enough that they could afford to sell it at a much more reasonable rate.
I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like that's why they haven't launched. Like, that's a big
reason. They're waiting for the manufacturing.
Yeah, until they can get it down to, like, a reasonable price.
Because they know. They have to know that it's not going to sell.
So, let's talk about the other Oculus game that me and Crispy played. Well, I played the Oculus thing, but...
Well, we're going to talk about that for a minute.
Okay.
Before we talk about that one, I do want to mention that I did play the Eve...
Oh, yeah, yeah,
the
yeah.
The Eve
yeah.
Valkyrie on... Yeah, like, Chris and I...
So good.
Yeah, Chris and I both got a chance to play a little bit of Eve Valkyrie on the Oculus, and that was cool. That was really cool. So, first of all, we did this at the, like, official Oculus booth. So, they have, like, when they... Like, the way that they demo it is they have these little, like... They kind of look like living rooms. And, like, these little alcoves that are kind of made up, like, living rooms with a... With a monitor and an Oculus and a controller and like a little sofa chair that you can sit in, and then you sit in, you put the Oculus on, and then they have like this Oculus interface that looks like this really futuristic like living room that you're in, and you can like look around and look behind you and everything. It's great.
You
and
look then down at yourself, you got your body.
And yeah, all that. And they've got these tiles floating around. They had like 8 different games you could play, and I saw Eve Valkyrie, and I was like, yup. They were like, oh, you want to play Air Mech Arena? I'm like, ha! Okay, no, fuck you. So Eve, though, oh my god, it was so fucking cool.
Yeah.
It just starts you in a cockpit of a fighter, in a like in a launch bay on a big like capital ship, and you're just sitting there, and you can hear some girl on the radio talking to you, and she's like, "Okay, like launch sequence, blah blah blah," and like all these lights and like these doors in front of you just start like opening up, and it's just like cool. Red lights going down, and you're just like, "Oh fuck!" You're like looking around your cockpit, and there's all these like details and everything. They even have like your body and like your hands like on the on the yoke, which is a little confusing at first. Like it takes a second to get into it, and then they launch, and it's just like. Like through this tube out into space, and when you hit space,
that sounds like the experience I had in the other game, but going backwards.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It's just the exact that feeling of shooting at a high rate of speed.
Yeah.
In what with the Oculus, or and, the, but it is awesome.
Well, when you get out of that tube and you're like in space, there's like all these capital ships flying around. There's squadrons of fighters like buzzing by you. There's a big space station in front of a planet up ahead, and. You're flying, and then all of a sudden, like, an enemy fleet, like, warps in, and all their fighters are flying around, and you're just buzzing around, shooting. And it's great, too, because the cockpit is constructed in a way where you can look down, like, you can look through your feet, like, and there's a port. You can see your sides. The ship itself actually has, like, these nacelles that come off the sides where your guns are. So, like, you're firing your gun, and you can look out the side of your cockpit and see, like, the gun actually firing.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really, really cool.
Same with the missile launcher
fucking,
that you can
yeah. That sounds kind of fucking amazing.
It's fucking sick. And this goes on for, you know, like 5 or 10 minutes. You're just flying around, blowing dudes up. And I mean, I'm talking about like two fighters will be like attacking
this
one of my...
This goes on for a couple minutes until I reach full orgasm.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm just like, dude, my mouth was just like wide open, like...
It's like watering.
Like, I've got like this Oculus on, and I'm just like... Like, it was amazing. And like, oh my god, like, you would, like, I dropped in behind some fighter, like, some enemy fighters, and I, like, blow them up, and there's, like, an explosion, and I fly through through the fucking plume of the explosion.
Just on top of the Oculus tech and how it works, it's actually a very satisfying dogfight game.
Yeah, it's pretty simple, it's pretty, like, very slick, very, like, easy to jump into, really, really fun, gives you that wonderful feeling of, like, motion. And the demo actually ends with, like you're in this dogfight, and then, like out of the corner of my eye, I was, like, seeing lightning. And I, like, turned my ship around, and there's this big, like, empty area of space, and there's just, like, lightning. And then it, like, start pulsing faster and faster and faster and faster. And then eventually this giant, like, Death Star-looking thing popped, like, just warped in and just started shooting laser beams everywhere. And I was like, fuck that. And I, like, turned around. And as I'm, like, banking around to head back towards, like, my fleet, like, there's these, like, beams shooting across my ship hitting these capital ships. And they are just, like, exploding.
That's awesome.
And like... It's all, like, happening in real time, and then eventually, like, the explosion, like, reaches out to where you are, and you see, like, your cockpit just start to, like, rip apart, and then that's, like, Eve Valkyrie. Yeah. Like, that's the end of the demo.
So, is this game supposed to be, like, a single-player experience, or is
it's supposed to be, like... My understanding of it is that it is supposed to be, like, Dust 514 somehow integrated into the larger, like, Eve metaverse. So, there can be Valkyrie players who are... fighters who will take on contracts and do work for these like fleet captains who
are playing Eve itself.
Yeah. Right? They'll post jobs. You'll take a job. You'll fly a mission for them, and you'll kind of support each other that way. I'm not really sure exactly how it's gonna work. I didn't even really get that into Dust 514 to know how robust that that mesh between the two games was.
See that whole experience sounds amazing. This is like. This is the first time that I'm kind of seeing, like, I've always asked myself, like, games have gotten to that point where they look so good now.
Yeah.
It's like they've reached that point where it's like you're not really going to be able to make them look that much better without crossing into the uncanny valley, and it's just kind of like, where, if that's the case, where do we go? Like, what's the next step? And now this is the first time I felt like, okay, maybe this technology is the next logical step.
I mean,
can you imagine full-on like AAA games where you're playing and like you're still using a controller, but you're walking around the world yourself and looking around the environment
instead of looking at a TV. You've got this wonderful sense of immersion, which I know sounds like a fucking pitch line, but that is what it is. Like, it feels like you're in it. I like without having tried the tech, it kind of looks like, you know, real D 3D, like going to a movie theater. And that's just like stupid gimmicks that you pay an extra $3-4 for.
Mm-hmm. These are not your...
This feels like this could actually open up a new world of like different kinds of games that previously wouldn't have been available.
Which seems like a great opportunity to transition to.
Well, to... No.
What?
I just,
you're going to ruin this transition!
You fucking kill the transition.
Well, I killed the fucking transition because I want to mention a few things. First off, I think Eve Valkyrie is like the perfect launch title for any VR system. It seems so well done. But the interesting thing about it is that this series, this Eve series, has been a fucking cash cow that the developers have never really taken advantage of. And it now seems like they're putting that money into something.
Yeah,
right.
Because I've never really cared about it.
I mean, love if, you know, every pair of Oculus Rift like comes with Eve Valkyrie. Like get started playing Eve Valkyrie. Like this is the perfect game to make somebody go like, why would I buy an Oculus?
No, but
for stuff like this
again,
like,
the gameplay and the visual feedback of what you see in Eve Valkyrie is fantastic, and but you can tell that they're putting money into it because the female voice in there is actually Katie Sackhoff. She's Starbuck from Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, she can't be that expensive.
Have you seen
some of the stuff she's been in?
Yes, I have.
Let's take a look at her IMDb.
Okay, yeah, let's do that.
You go ahead.
I'll tell you. No, she's been in the Bionic One. Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, because that was good. Yeah.
Yeah, the big money stuff.
But, you know, Battlestar Galactica, it's a series that's close to my heart. But it's just, if you're going to hire Hollywood talent and you're going to put that much effort into your just visual feedback of the game, sounds like you're going to put a lot of money into it. And
it could be a great entry point for the rest of the Eve universe.
That's the thing with Eve Universe is that the cinematics that they film for these games are fucking amazing. You go back and watch like the launch cinematic for Eve from like 10-15 years ago, and it's fucking amazing. And then you get into the game and it's just it's spreadsheets still, and it's moving ships around.
Is it still fucking amazing, Chris, or do you remember it being fucking amazing? Because I have a lot of experiences where I'm like, that game was fucking amazing, and then I play it again and I'm like,
no, I'm talking about the cinematic.
Yeah, but like...
Cinematic versus the actual core gameplay.
Do you think the cinematic from 10 years ago is still fucking amazing? I don't know. I'm just saying. I'm just a little skeptical of it being fucking amazing. I think it may have at least been downgraded to like...
All right, let's pause the podcast. I'll watch this cinematic and then we can decide first.
There's no time!
Okay.
Let's talk about that other game.
So, I don't even remember what this game was called.
It's called...
But it's the bomb defusing game.
Just keep talking and nobody explodes.
That's it. Okay.
Even though that's a lie.
So, this game, one person is on the Oculus Rift, and the other person has a fucking notebook.
A physical
notebook that they're...
paper and pen and...
That has, like, information about these different bombs that you can defuse.
Maybe a highlighter?
Well, it's like... So the different pages are all about different modules that can appear in bombs. So the bomb can have anywhere between like 3 and 6.
Yeah, six was the maximum.
Different randomized modules, and some of them will be like sections of exposed wire. Some of them will be keypads. Some of them will be like a button. Like there's all these different things, and we Ed and I played. One round. And,
which we filmed, by the
which
way.
Which we filmed.
Oh, and it's
going to
be good.
Was fun. And Ed used the Oculus and was our diffuser, and I was sitting there IRL with the notebook, like, trying to give him information.
The important thing to understand about this game is that the person not wearing the Oculus cannot see
What's going on. I didn't even see a timer. Like, I didn't even know how much time we had.
Yeah, so...
The person with the Oculus literally is the only person who sees this and is dictating what they see to the person outside of the Oculus, who is then using a real physical notebook to basically look through an instruction manual to defuse the bomb.
It is RTFM the game. Read the fucking manual the game.
Yeah,
essentially.
Yeah.
Which, you know... Some might say sounds awful.
Oh, but this game is so good.
Oh, it was so much fun.
This is going to be fucking fun to stream.
Nothing like fucking focuses you. Like, and that's the thing, too. Like, I was literally sitting at a table with physical paper and a pen, and like I was playing a video game.
Yeah.
But it was still like the most exciting game I played. I didn't touch a controller. I didn't look at a screen, and that was still the most exciting video game I played.
And that's what's cool about this VR stuff is like, because I am fully encased in this environment.
Dude, the fucking best thing was when Ed's friends were next to the booth, and I go, Ed, and Ed like pulled off the Morpheus and in one motion pulled off the Morpheus or the Oculus. Was it Oculus?
Oculus, it was not. Yeah.
Pulled off the Oculus and was like Jason.
Jason,
and, like,
I turned around
in the complete opposite direction.
I had no idea where it was coming from. I
had no idea what was going on.
Basically the way it worked was. I started it, and there was a serial number on it, and I described the different modules.
The general flow was like, can you find a serial number on the bomb? Okay, the serial number ends in a 1. All right, so that means blood. Like, yeah. And the instructions read, like, when clipping wires, if the last wire is red and the serial number ends in an odd number, clip the first wire.
Yeah.
If not, clip the second wire. If there's only one yellow wire, but it's the second wire, like, it's really confusing, and like when you're like panicking, it's really hard to figure out, like, so that one I'm like, okay, what wires do you see? Read me off the colors of the wires. And he's sitting there going like, okay, there's a yellow, there's a red, there's a blue, there's a red, and I'm sitting here like looking through, I'm trying to synthesize that information based on what the manual is telling me into like, what wire do you cut? Like that is the actual, like, the famous Hollywood bomb, like, diffusal moment of, like, what wire do you cut? Oh, my God. And there was all these other different things, too. Like, he had to hit a button, and there was a keypad where it's like, all right, I want you to enter this combination. And the keypad obviously isn't numbers, because that'd just be too easy. It's all these weird symbols.
So, like, there was, like, an Omega. We called it the Omega. Yeah. The Weird Six.
The barbell.
The barbell that was diagonal.
Yeah,
or whatever.
The diagonal barbell, the weird six. Yeah, so he's just like, okay, it's a weird six, it's a barbell. And I'm like looking at this like grid of symbols on this page, and I'm just that kind of looks like a barbell, I guess. Like, that one looks like a weird six, I guess. Like, it's just like, okay, I need you to hit these buttons in this order, blah, blah, blah. And we, so we did the wires, we did the abort button, we did the keypad. The keypad and the buttons cleared, so like they were checked off. They're like, okay,
little lights, like little bulbs in the corner of each module, and they light up green when they're cleared or done or whatever.
Right.
And so after we cleared the keypad, I looked back at the wires and there was no light on there, and I was like, "Son, we did something wrong."
And the timer sped up.
Yeah, the timer.
Like,
he's like,
"Okay, do this." I was like, "Okay, do this," and I told him the combination, and he hit it in exactly. And he's like, "The timer sped up," and I'm like, "Whoa!" And then we're like, "Okay, going back to the wires. Which wire did you cut? Okay, read me the colors again. Oh my God!" And then I was like, "How much time do we have?" And he's like, "Oh, 30 seconds." And I'm just sitting there looking at this book, and I'm like, I don't know. We're gonna die. I did what the book said. If what you're like, I can't check his work.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if what you're telling me is true, that should have been this. Like, that should have been correct. And then I was like, oh my god.
It's very much a Hollywood moment. Like,
yeah, it was this moment of like, the bomb's gonna blow up.
Yeah.
And we just need to do something. And I was like, okay, just cut the first wire. I don't know. Just cut the first wire. And he cut it, and you just hear this like, beep. And everyone who was watching this on a monitor, like in the hall, like in the aisle,
you see him go, yeah.
They were all just like, oh, like oh my God. And I'm like, was that it? Was that it? I was like,
I think he literally asked, are we dead yet?
I was like, I expected that to kill us. Like, I thought that was going to blow them up. It turned out that was the right wire to cut to defuse
the bomb.
And
we had 9 seconds left.
We had
the
like
clock.
9.4 seconds left.
Yeah.
And it was just like,
definitely a fun experience. I would encourage everyone to watch the video when we get that up, because it's really cool. And of course, it has all kinds of stream potential. And we talked to the developer about setting up a copy of the game so we can stream that. It's honestly something that's going to work out great, I think, for the dual stream.
For dual stream.
So that could be really cool. You know what? We can even find a way to do that with like community members somehow.
We need to just have like print out the manual or whatever, and then have a camera mounted on someone's shoulder, like flipping through the manual.
That would be crazy. Have them wear the GoPro. Can we stream directly from the GoPro? Probably.
And
not.
I mean that, like, when the game comes out, it comes out like October 8th.
Yeah.
So like, not a lot of people are gonna have Oculus Rifts.
No.
Well, nobody.
Can we buy Oculus Rift yet?
Yeah. No, well, not that's next 2016.
They had. I mean, you could have.
There is. Like, there is going to be a monitor. There's going to be a. Yeah, there is going to be a just a regular PC version.
And so that'll work just
he's
fine.
Gonna, he's going to send. For... I think they're going to send us a, just a regular version.
I mean, the Oculus is a nice touch, but like even without it, just the concept of the gameplay. As long as the person with the book can't see what's going on the screen, the game is. So much fun. It's one of the few games where, like, I played it and I'm like, I just want to, like, can we go again? Like, please, like, I just want to hang out at your booth all day.
My turn.
Yeah. It's great. It's great. We're going to go back and do it again tomorrow because I want to try it on the other side now.
Yeah. I'd be interested to play it too.
We should do an interview.
We should.
We should. What else do we have?
I played Lovers in a Dangerous Space Time, is coming out, like, next week.
Yeah.
Have you never
played it before?
Did you find a lover on the?
I did find. I have. Well, so one of my friends, we played it together, and they had never played it either. So us kind of learning the way the game works or whatever, and as I started, I was the one navigating through the area, and then he started to get mad at me because he was working the shield, and he was like, "Dude, fucking get on the gun and kill some of these things." We were surrounded by like ten different things.
So the concept of this game is to what? Encourage cooperation among.
Yeah. So the way it works is that there's like 7 or 8 different levers in the ship, and one of them is the way you move the ship around. Once you move the shield, and then there's 4 different guns on each of the 4 compass directions. That can only reach a certain amount.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're surrounded by enemies, it's kind of hard to, like, you need one person to use the shield to kind of try and block stuff, and the other person's running from one end of the ship to the other to try and do it. And
it's 2 people trying to fill like 6 roles.
Yeah,
like,
basically. Yeah, and it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. We only played the basic level. I'd be curious to go back and play one of the more advanced levels.
It gets fucked.
Yeah,
it gets bad.
Especially because I think there's like different configurations of the ship too that you can play with.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah,
and then all the different permutations of the different like weapons and shields and like the modifier crystals you can get for that.
Yeah, those modifier crystals that
stuff
are cool.
This stuff gets crazy.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of Mad Max? Because we all played it.
So this is the demo from E3. Y'all played the open world.
Emily is giving us a thumbs down. Emily was not impressed.
I played the other mission.
I did the driving.
I did the Magnum Opus demo, which
so
was
that's the E3. One I played at E3. I played the whatever the other one.
I played
called.
The Fort Scrotus. I think is
Fort Scrotus.
And the guy that was next to us, he's like, you can also play the Fort, and he like giggled to himself.
Himself like a little schoolgirl.
And he said he's been doing this the entire tonight, and he's giggled at himself every single time.
The immediate impression I got was the same that seemed to be the prevailing sentiment coming out of Gamescom and E3, in that this demo, it just like throws you into it.
Yep.
And it doesn't tell you how to do anything, and like
you're relying on the
there's
people.
There's a lot in the wasteland. Like there's a lot going on, there's a lot to do, and it's kind of just like you got 20 minutes.
There's a lot of mechanics too. Like this feels pretty mechanic heavy. Like
very complicated.
So you have the set of ground combat, which works a little bit like Batman combat, where you're like dodging and tapping buttons at the right moment to go into counterattacks and things like that. You can pick up weapons off the ground and use them, which changes the combat around a little bit. But then on top of that, you have an entirely separate set of skills and abilities and movesets, whatever, you can learn and pull off in your car. So there's 2 completely different combat styles in this game.
Yeah. And I think when you're on foot and you're doing like that kind of Batman like brawler style combat, it's pretty basic. It's pretty like there's nothing really.
The camera makes it a little complicated though, because the camera is like really
when
really
you
up
get
close.
In the car.
Yeah.
Things get like weird.
The
camera. So first of all, like they want to give you like a excellent range of mobility. The camera, in my opinion, is just too floaty. Like in a lot of games, especially driving games, like if you're driving fast, if you're driving in a straight line, you're driving forward. Like your camera's natural inclination is to readjusts behind your car.
Yeah.
If you're moving it, that's like if you hit left or right, the camera will rotate. But if you let go, it just readjusts behind your car. It didn't do that here. Like, this camera just spins, and it'll stay wherever you leave it. And you can tell that they're doing that to kind of facilitate this vehicle combat, because there are a lot of instances where you'll be, like, driving, and a convoy of enemies will just be surrounding you, and you need to be targeting a guy over here and a guy over there and a guy behind you and a guy in front of you. The way the weapons work, you know, you have your D-pad where you're kind of select. First of all, I don't care for that. I don't care for the fact that while I'm driving in real time, like, I'm just, like, hitting the D-pad 9 times until I get to my harpoon or my shotgun or something. Like, a weapon wheel would have been nice. Just, like, a slowdown weapon wheel. Give me the D-pad.
Yeah.
Or give me the, like, harpoon. Give
hit
me
a shotgun. Bumper and then it slows down.
Because every time I had to change a weapon, I crashed into something.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was frustrating.
It doesn't help that the general controls of... The controls for just moving the car in general aren't not that I don't think I'll be able to adapt, but they aren't what you would expect.
It's not very tight. Now we've been told that the feel and movement of the car is based on the parts you put on it.
Yeah.
So you'll have
different which I'm trying to believe until I find out.
This demo is supposed to be like kind of an early, like, earlier in the game, like, when you first are really, like, set out into the wasteland to just kind of do whatever you want. So your car isn't, like, your car isn't as upgraded as it will eventually become. And I asked the guy when I got off the game, too, I'm like, so does the car always feel like that? Or is this, like, I opened up a menu for him, too, like, with the Magnum Opus menu, and I was like, or is that determined by all this stuff? And there's like 15, 20 different things you can change on that goddamn car. From the body to, like, exhaust to
and
tires.
And each thing is, like, three or four or more parts.
Like, and he's like, well, no, like, that's all. Your car feels the way it does because of the parts that are on it right now. And most of those parts were, like, still beginner parts. So the car felt like a fucking boat.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, too, is there was no handbrake. There's no handbrake button.
Yeah, there is.
I don't think there is. There's a little, like, he does this little, like, juke dodge button.
There is a handbrake button. Thing is, it's not where you would expect it to be based on...
Where was it?
I think it was one of the face buttons.
Like, no, because I would expect a handbrake button to be like X or something.
It was either one of the bumpers or one of the other triggers.
I don't know if this was the monitor. I don't think it was. I think it was the actual game. But like when I turn the stick to turn the car, there's, like, a noticeable delay between, like, me hitting left and the car turning left. And it was throwing me through a fucking loop.
So I actually got my car stuck. I managed to get it, like, completely stuck, could not get it out or whatever, and I had to, it wasted, like, 5 minutes or whatever. I had to run far enough away to despawn the car so I could recall it again.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's weird.
And it was like, well, the, it's like you said, it's supposed to be one of the very first missions.
What I'm saying, like, not only is there that delay, but like once he like actually gets into the turn, that turning radius is really tight. Like tight as it should be, as I would expect it to be with a handbrake, you know? But I'm not hitting a handbrake button. So it takes me a while to get the car turning, and then once it's turning, like, I gotta stop it from turning.
Right.
Like, it's so, like, I feel like I have to predict the car's movement before it actually makes it. And it's kind of frustrating, especially when you're combining that with combat, because you've got your, like, everything's on the circle button. Well, we were playing on Xbox, so it was a B button.
Yeah.
Right. And that, like, is supposed to slow down time, and then you can kind of target specific areas of the car.
So you aim with the left bumper with whatever you're doing, and then you hit B to fire. No. Or whatever.
See, here's the problem.
That's not how I was doing it. I was told the whole B, and that's what put him into the slow-mo. And then you target something, and when you let go of B is when he, like... See, we don't even know how to fucking play the game. And
the way I was doing it was you hold left bumper, target the highlighted enemy or whatever,
they don't
and
have,
you press B.
They don't even have a little fucking placard on the demo station that tells you what the controls are.
Yeah, the guy did tell us just to tap it. So I wasn't even targeting things.
The guy who was working the booth worked on Shadows of Mordor. and was like, yeah, I wasn't even in the office when they brought this game in for us to play it. He's like, yeah, I've just been kind of winging it this whole time. So what I think is going on here is that this was just a really ill thought out demo, because it did a really terrible job of like kind of,
well, first of all,
telling me what the game is like.
First of all, it's not very focused. No. It's literally kind of an open world demo. It's they have people demoing the game that didn't even work on the game.
Yeah,
it's a lot of PR people, honestly.
Yeah, and people from other dev teams and things like that. And it's just, you know, it's a pretty mechanic heavy game. It's like if someone handed you Batman, having never played handed you Arkham Knight, having never played an Arkham like a Batman game at all, and just said, "Have fun." Like, yeah. And you know that game is just fucking just overflowing with mechanics and things you can do, and it's just. If you don't know what to expect or how it works, it's just you would be lost. And I feel like that's the same situation here. I'm hoping that the game, the final product, feels better because you'll be slowly introduced to these things over time.
I was planning on picking up this game same day as Metal Gear.
Yeah.
I think I still am. Like, I think I still want to play it, because really, playing this demo was just like, no, just let me start from the beginning. Let me actually, like, fucking play the
game. You can
game.
See,
like, let like, me properly potential. Play the game.
You can see the potential. Like, going in the menu
there
and seeing all those things you can do is like, holy crap.
There are really cool moments where it's like a fucking, like, war boy, like, war buggy or something's coming at you, and you just fucking throw a spear and yank his tire off, and he crashes, and it's just like, that's really fucking cool. I love that. Like, you're that harpoon, by the way, there's a lot of fun stuff you can do with that, like just tearing down towers, I was like spearing people and like pulling them out of their cars with it,
it's a great preview of what you can expect from Just Cause 3.
There's a sniper in a tower that, because of where my car was, I couldn't shoot him with the sniper rifle because it wouldn't go up high enough, so I was like, fuck it, I'm just gonna use my harpoon, and I harpooned him on the tower
and pulled him off
the tower
and dragged him for a
and
mile.
Dragged him for a little bit.
There's
cool.
A certain,
you fucking reaver murdering bastard.
There's a certain bit of creativity to the destruction in this game,
and
it's fun, and I still really want to play it. I just, like, that demo was just like a real drag, man.
It didn't impress.
I don't know, man. Like, if you're on the fence about this game, I would say
hold off until.
I would say wait. Just wait and see what people
say. I would
say, like,
you know, play Metal Gear on day one like a normal person.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's gonna be playing Metal Gear.
Just wait,
anyway.
But you know,
I feel like kind of an idiot for buying it day one, but I don't.
Yeah, I'm all right. It's all
I don't
right.
even
I'm
like I'm waiting.
One,
I'm waiting on GameStop.com to send me my Metal Gear, so I don't even know that it's gonna be there day one. So I'll need something to play, but. We'll see. I kind of walked out of the Mad Max demo with more questions than I had going.
Right.
You know?
Sure.
But I want it to be good.
I think it has
Open
the potential,
Mad
though,
Max game.
With those trees and stuff. On
Focused
trees,
around but... building your car? Like, that should be a home run.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Cool. What else do we have to talk about?
The only other thing I played today... was we played together, Chris and I, we played 20XX.
Oh, well, we played a little bit of that.
Yeah.
We played a very little bit.
It's a Mega Man X clone built for co-op.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The one thing, there weren't even that many enemies in the very small section of the game that we played. A lot of the challenge, like the co-op challenge, was built around the fact that most of the platforming you're doing is on platforms and walls that disappear after they're touched.
Yeah. Where
so it's like, how do we both get through this? Like, it's like you have to be in sync of like, okay, go now. And then you, like, the first guy is going and the second guy has to be like following right behind him to stay up.
That's kind of cool.
Or you die. Yeah, it is kind of cool.
It's a good idea. It's just got some fundamental problems in there. It's also a roguelike.
It spends a lot of time, like, separating you from each other, I feel like.
Yeah, it's a game that's built for couch co-op that you can easily tell. The problem is, the main problem I had was that the camera tends to focus on one primary character,
and it
does do that kind of zoom out, kind of like in Smash Brothers,
right.
Try to show as much of the character. But then you lose yourself in the environment very easily, and when you're having to navigate these platforms that are falling and disappearing and even some of the map design was kind of buggy.
I think the other problem, too, another reason why I'm not really comfortable giving a full opinion on this game is that there are two characters you can pick from. There's one that's like a Mega Man who has like a Buster Cannon.
Right.
And then there's one that's like a Zero who uses a sword. And we were like, oh, let's do like...
One of each.
Yeah, let's do one of each. I go and I switch to Zero and we start the level. And Chris Davis is also Zero. So we were both melee characters. And it was kind of... I don't know. It was weird. I'd have to play a lot more of it before I really had an opinion. The concept's cool. I don't know. I've never played a Mega Man game and been like, I definitely want another person in this. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just kind of weird. I don't know. It seems gimmicky.
I think it could be pretty cool. I mean, with the roguelike elements and what you could potentially do with that. I mean, I did like the fact that, you know, in a Mega Man game, you fall down a pit or you hit a spike, you're dead instantly.
Yeah.
But in this, you do respawn on the same screen, you just lose a point of health.
Mm-hmm.
Until you just run out completely out of health, and then you are actually dead.
Yeah.
So it seems a lot more fair and as far as how the co-op works.
Maybe more accessible.
Than navigating the environment. So yeah. I don't know, I think it has potential. Yeah. I think it's got a lot of bug fixing it needs to do.
We'd have to play a lot more.
I'd like to go play a lot more of it, honestly.
I only have one other game
today. I have one other, too.
Alright, what did you play, Ed?
I played a game called To Leave. And it is a kind of a puzzler, but has some...
Was this an indie game?
Yeah, it was in the indie mega booth. And basically, you're holding on to a door... And the door is flying around in this
environment or
whatever. And at first it seems like really simple and really easy to do because you're just kind of flying through. And the way it works is that if the door hits anything in the environment, then you die.
So you're steering this door?
You're steering this door around.
That's a very weird concept.
And it's flying around and you're able to do this thing that he calls impulse, which is like you hit the right trigger and it shoots up suddenly. And so what is really cool about it is that as you get later into the levels, you start to have to, like, really do some really good timing of things to, like... Because, like I said, if anything hits the door, then you die and you reset and go back to the beginning of the level.
Yeah.
And so there are, like, little pressure plates or whatever that are going back and forth, and you're trying to time it just right to basically slither through this little tiny narrow window... And then later there's, like, these enemies that will only move if you're within their, like, line of sight or whatever, and they're, like, velocity-based, so the further they are the way, the faster they go as they get closer to you.
Yeah.
And you're trying to, like, fake them out to make them go far enough away that you have enough space to move to the next area. It does seem like a cool game. I wish the portions, the kind of tutorial levels, were a little bit more condensed, rather than having to play like 7 levels before you get something remotely challenging in any kind of way. But that being said, I talked to the guy a little bit, and they're from Ecuador. They're an Ecuador-based game studio.
Interesting.
And it was cool listening to his story, because they dropped out of school, but they continue to get funding from the university to finish their game.
Interesting.
Yeah, and basically it's just like as a way of supporting them and what they're doing. They're getting some funding from the university. Ooh, but
wow.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, there's only one guy there, and he's the guy, the main, like, I guess, lead producer or whatever. And it was really interesting to talk to him and just talk about being the only game developer from what he said, the only game developer in Ecuador, what that was like.
Interesting.
Yeah. It was cool. I'd recommend it, though. Give it a try.
So it's in the Indie Mega Booth.
It's in the Indie Mega Booth, like 2 booths away from the Bomb game that I can't remember the name of.
I still have a lot of games to eventually get to at the Mega Booth.
Yeah, definitely.
I have one more game. Anybody else have another game? Or
no. What do you got?
I can't remember what the name of the game is. It's the last one we played, Crispy. What was it called?
Albert and Otto.
Albert and Otto. We played this today. It is a 2D puzzle platformer, and it looks visually it looks a little bit like Limbo, but it kind of opposite. Everything in the foreground is white. Everything in the background is like black and shades of gray. But it has this really like chill soundtrack, and you play this like character. This was it a little girl or a little boy?
Little boy.
He has like a gun, and he carries around Otto, which is this little red rabbit. Is it, I guess, a stuffed rabbit?
Yeah, it was like his sister's, or it's some girl's.
Yeah, so he's explaining what this game is about, which is great. And he's talking about how it's like, it's dark, you're trying to find out what happened to your sister, she's got this cute little rabbit, and oh yeah, and it's Nazi Germany. And we're just like, well, what?
If he hadn't said that, we would have no idea.
Right.
I mean, there's a boss battle against a giant robot.
Yeah.
You can sort of tell with, like, the propaganda posters, like, when they, like, tell you to, like, pick up the rabbit, and this is how you double jump, and blah, blah, blah.
It's all written in red.
I mean, yeah, it's got like, this kind of slight aesthetic to it.
When he starts to get into the story, it's about, like, he said it has a dark story to it.
Yeah, he says it'd be pretty dark.
To get more into it.
Yeah.
But
it's not like there's, like, swastikas, like, flying around or anything.
It's not that blatant.
You have to fight swastikas.
But, you know, the gist of it is, it's just you're going through the world, and you have this rabbit that gives you the ability to double jump, or in Emily's case, quadruple jump, and that was a bug that they discovered need to fix. It gives you the ability to double jump, and you can use it to activate pressure plates. And so it's kind of hard to explain some of these. Like, a lot of these puzzles were a little bit outside of the box. There's one where in the background you see this giant boulder rolling through this, like, pathway, and as you in the foreground you stand on pressure plates to lift up these floorboards that will allow it to skip over these holes that have switches in them. So you have to make sure the boulder continues to roll on a smooth path, right? But you have to jump from platform to platform and land on these pressure plates in time, if the boulder ends up falling into one of these ditches, it pushes a plate down, and then all these spikes come up and kill you instantly.
Mm-hmm.
But like we watched this one girl try to do it like a dozen times, and she was freaking out. And then like the developer was like, "Let me show you how the solution." And he picked up the controller and like you jump, like you're literally when you're jumping from one platform to the next. In mid jump, you drop the rabbit, and it falls down to the platform below the one you were on, onto the second pressure plate, while you land on the first pressure plate, and then the boulder rolls around, and then you jump from the second one to the third one in time for to roll over the final hole in the ground.
That's
like
cool.
That. And like it was literally just one, just drop the rabbit, and you have to make one jump.
So you're kind of playing a co-op game in a way without being co-op.
Yeah, so you have to think effectively how to use the rabbit and the character together.
That's cool.
It was really outside the box. It was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Has a really cool art style. Really chill soundtrack. The platforming was not as precise.
It really needs to be tightened up.
It needs to be tightened up
a
little bit.
There's some bad dead spaces on the end of.
I really didn't have that much
trouble. I had a lot.
The problems that I was seeing.
Where it's
were
like
people,
if you're used to playing a platformer where you're like running to the edge of the platform to get like the maximum distance on your jump, there is this like noticeable dead area where if you hit the jump button even while he's still on the platform, he just doesn't jump. He just runs off. Or if once you get your double jump, if you do it, he'll jump, but then you don't have your second jump.
I also noticed like it's really also weird. A platformer where if you jump and like the character hits the side of the platform, but instead of grabbing onto the platform and pulling yourself up, you just hit it and fall.
He just drops.
But the cool thing is, like, the developers were there. It was, you know, three guys that had worked on the game.
A couple of guys from South Africa. They were really cool.
And, you know, they were really cool. We talked to them for like 20, 30 minutes about the game. And, you know, they were very much the kind of developers who were like, you know, yeah, oh, they're finally, like, Emily broke the game like three times as she does. In fact, she got to the boss fight and was like, oh, fuck this, and literally just ran out of the boss fight room, and he was like, wait, what? How did she do that? It's like, she just skipped the boss.
I didn't
want to
fight it. She didn't have time. The show floor was closing.
I was like, was that supposed to happen? And he was like, no. So, but they were very much like, I'm taking notes. He's like, I'm going to go back to the hotel room tonight and work on things. So like,
that's cool.
Like they're very fluid, like they're fixing things and taking notes, so... You know, this is I said we'd go back and maybe film a little bit of it or something, so this is a good opportunity to maybe point those things out, because they seem very receptive to feedback.
Right.
And that's probably another game we'll end up playing on the feed in the near future when they decide to release. But it looked really cool, and we had a lot of fun with it. Even watching it. I was watching Emily play. I didn't even get my hands on the controller, but it was fun to try and work together and figure out the best way to solve puzzles and things like that. So pretty satisfying.
But so, I just remembered I played Homefront the Revolution.
All right, thanks for listening, guys. I'm just kidding. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so the game,
do you think it'd be better if we just I got another person to play it, because I
actually we have an appointment now. Ed played it today, but we made an appointment today to play it.
Yeah, so let's talk about tomorrow, because I have some things to say, and maybe getting another person's opinion on it would be nice. Sure. Yeah.
So we're gonna go ahead and end it here because it's late and we're tired.
Yeah. Do you want to give a preview as to what we want to play tomorrow?
Hob is one.
Yeah, we're playing Hob.
Hob tomorrow. We're playing XCOM 2. Tomorrow.
I'm gonna be checking out Minecraft Story Mode.
Minecraft Story Mode.
Oh yeah.
The things that I think I want to probably try and get either try and get an appointment for, or even maybe stand in line for if I have to. I do want to play the new Assassin's Creed because it is there very much so. They have a lot of kiosks too, so I don't think it'll be too long of a wait. If y'all haven't yet, go play Mirror's Edge 2. It's the same demo from E3, but it's a pretty tight demo.
Yeah, it's good.
And it's open world. And
I personally want to get my hands on Hyperlight Drifter.
Hyperlight Drifter looks cool.
Yeah, it's up there, sixth floor. Which there's a ton of indie games up there.
Yeah,
yeah.
I also want to check out. I want to try the new build of Due Process.
Oh yeah, that looks cool.
I forgot. Yeah,
that looks cool. What else?
I want to check out Pit People, the new game by the Behemoth guys, the people that do Castle Crashers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pug-sniffing butts.
Butts.
Oh, butt-sniffing pugs. Butt-sniffing pugs. I can't believe it. They made that game.
You go around and you steal abilities from other pugs by sniffing their butts.
You steal abilities.
Pug abilities.
So it's essentially, it's Kirby, except you're sniffing asses.
Yes. Yes.
Instead of eating people.
Okay. Exactly.
About right.
Okay.
I'm going to go play Infinite Scuba all day.
Infinite Scuba.
Oh, thank you.
Well, it's just it's a kind of a weird game to demo at a convention like PAX.
I know.
It just felt so bad.
She was very sweet, and they're doing such a good job, like researching everything.
Yeah,
this is literally like a scuba simulator where you're like swimming underwater and like touching fish.
It's just like a really
touching fish to like get information on, which is cool. And it's like they're pitching it kind of as a great like learning tool for like schools and whatnot. Watching Emily try to click the fish made it very clear that she needs to play more Counter-Strike.
No, it was really hard because like you have to be within a certain range, and then like I don't know, it wasn't very like they should slow it down and make it like
slow down, Scuba Simulator.
Like, bullet time or something.
Well, like you. But your environment is very fast. Really fast. And so
spoiler alert, fish can swim.
It makes it like difficult because there's like a really drastic juxtaposition between like how you move and how the environment moves. But it was really cool because they're working with like oceanographers to research actual like fish and plant life and the demo was about an actual shipwreck here.
Yeah, they were modeled after actual shipwrecks. Which
like
is cool.
Here in somewhere in Seattle, like off of the
but coast. I mean,
and it was like a World War II civilian ship that was conscripted into the Japanese army, and it got hit by one torpedo and sunk. Like, it was cool. Like, this woman really knew what she was talking about, and they worked with like historians to like get their shit together, so I think it'd be great for kids to like put it in the school.
Wait, what was it called?
I hate kids.
Infinite Scuba.
Infinite Scuba. Yeah.
But it'd be good for them.
I hate kids, but it'd be great for them.
It ain't got no XP system, so.
Well, I mean, the real question is, does it have fish AI, and will the fish actually swim away from the player?
No.
Okay. Well then,
the point
not
is
that advanced
about
for
the
kids.
Sponge, Chris.
Oh, you know what? For Honor.
Yeah, we need to play.
You said you talked to him. We can just walk up and play.
I talked to the guy, and he said that we can just walk up and be like, "Hey, we're media," and then we can just go in and play. So
we'll be doing that tomorrow. Yeah. Because I had to wait. I waited for 2 hours at E3 and just gave up.
Oh, Oh, we also need to do Battlefront.
Four on.
Oh, I didn't see it. Where is it?
Wait, which game?
Is it?
Which game?
Oh, it's playable at the PlayStation booth. Okay,
Battlefront. Oh, yeah. You all need to play Battlefront.
Yeah. I see Project Morpheus.
No. Contrary to popular belief, no Fallout 4 playable.
Yeah. Mario Maker?
Mario Maker.
Mario Maker does look
Mario cool.
Oh, yeah. The Bethesda booth is just a huge circle jerk. It's, yeah, it's terrible.
They have, they
like,
have
here, some... take your picture with Mr.
They, they have Fallout Shelter playable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Any check my dudes. They always do, like, I don't know, Bethesda hires them really great people to make stuff, especially for Dishonored.
Like, right.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I got oh, that Dishonored display is cool.
That like, little display.
I mean, it is a big circle jerk, but, like, they had somebody make a really nice...
Corvo mask, and they...
Well, the Corvo I don't, mask but, they like, had, but, like, the outfit, I don't know.
But it was it's great, and it's... You're right, it is, it, and it does a really good job of,
they do,
like...
They do a tremendous job of, like, setting up like small pieces that get you interested
of conveying the game's aesthetic, but like I swear to God, if they had just a little black room with a screen where I could play a little bit of Dishonored 2, I would take that any day of the week over that.
Yeah,
that's why
it's kind of it's just on. I think the weirdest thing is that they have like nothing is playable from Bethesda.
Yeah, they have nothing.
They have a presence
because
here
because they don't fucking need to.
Not well, no,
like, fuck you. You're gonna buy Fallout anyway.
I mean, like, let's be honest. They have. They got Dishonored 2, Doom, and Fallout coming out, and like those are all like.
But I mean, they didn't even
anticipated titles.
They didn't even have a demo for Elder Scrolls Online, and they would push the fuck out of that.
Yeah. Well, it's like, been at every PAX for the past year.
It's been like every convention for the past year.
Man, yeah.
I have shirts from that game, but I don't even know what it is.
Hell, they didn't have Prey 2, and that's all that matters. I have a shirt for that game, guys. I have a shirt for Prey 2. That game is never happening, and I have a shirt for it.
Oh, we should go check out Bombshell. It's upstairs.
I saw that.
It's the 3D Duke Realms. Nukem? It's a.
I'm almost hesitant to do it just because
the game that was almost Duke Nukem.
Yeah. Duke Nukem with a chick, maybe. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Big roll on arm.
All right.
I don't know. There's a lot of the games we need to still play.
We have a lot of stuff to see. We have three more days.
Two days
for some of us. Anyways. Thanks for listening, guys. 4playernetwork.com. This is PAX Prime 2015. Ed, thank you for being here. It's lovely to have you on a podcast.
Finally. I know.
All right. Chris and Chris, we'll see you tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No thanks for us.
Yeah.
No, you're...
No, fuck you two.
Yeah, no
get
thanks.
Get the fuck out of my hotel room.
Get out of
good
my...
Night. Yeah, good night, everybody. We love
good
you.
Good night. We'll see you. Peace out.